It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Could it be true? Rumor says Google's stopping all investment in Google+. We'll find out more. Microsoft launches its new email, Outlook.com. And Google Fiber hits Kansas City. We all want it. Stay tuned. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 157, recorded August 1st, 2012, The Hasselhoff of Germany. This Week in Google is brought to you by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system to go along with their great web hosting, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs with automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG8. And by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at ting.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. And, you know, I got to say this right up front, because sometimes people say, well, you don't talk enough about Google. Well, it's not just Google. It's the cloud. It's Facebook. It's Twitter. It's what's going on in the new world. I know, and I'm not going to say of social, but I'm just saying in the new world up there in the space air, in the cloud. Joining us from the cloud, via the cloud, Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York, blogger at BuzzMachine.com. And he's wearing a T-shirt of unknown provenance, but maybe I could figure that. Man, woman, android. It's
from the
Ben Casey.
Google gift shop.
That's awesome.
Cool. That is cool.
I love it.
Aaron Newcomb's also here. He works at Oracle, but he worked at Sun before that, and that's really the real. I'm not going to even mention the O word.
That's fine. Don't have to while I'm here.
Yeah, you've seen him often on Floss Weekly, open source expert on Java, and an Android user, right?
That's right, absolutely. Okay. Big Android fanboy.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Drew Olenoff is also here from thenextweb.com, tech journalist extraordinaire.
Well,
that Drew
you.
On the Twitter. Hey, Drew, good to see you.
It's good to see you again.
Welcome to the show.
Sorry, I couldn't be there in person.
I know, you know, but I understand. Duty calls. He's got a file or something like some sort of. Yeah. Happy
that's,
nonsense.
That's stuff.
He has a job or something like
that. Gotta make the donuts.
So this just in, thank you to the chat room. It is not in our rundown. It is a rumor. Frederick Lardinois and Alexia Tsotsis writing in TechCrunch posted an hour ago, rumor Google puts a hold on new Google Plus acquisitions. The source from Google tells us Google is weary of both growing the Google Plus team now and providing the product with any additional resources until January. Could this be the first crack in the Google happy face facade that Google, everything's going great. Google Plus is fantastic. The Google Plus Hawaii trip is apparently on the schedule still. They're all going to Hawaii. 450 Google Plus employees for an offsite Maui in September. How much could that cost, though, really?
Right. you can afford it, can't you, Leah?
Maybe Larry and Sergey bought a yacht.
I mean, 450 people is a lot of people. Is that overly large for a team?
It's pretty big. It's pretty darn big. I mean, when you need that many developers, I mean, there's a couple of reasons you would do this as a company, right? So one is, you know, I guess the rumors here would be that, you know, things are just getting too big or, you know, maybe Google is, you know, trying to de-emphasize Google Plus a little bit. I don't think so. The other reason you might do it is because you've got some sort of something big happening in the company, right? So the execs come out and they say, you know what, we can't hire anything else because something big internal is happening. And we can't do it anymore.
And it might just be about money. It might just be about money.
Yeah.
But it also could be an organizational thing. It could be a lot more. It's hard to tell what's going on. Now, what were the acquisitions? The $100 million Meebo.
Right.
$15 million for Milk, Kevin Rose.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that was more connected to Android, right? Wasn't it?
Didn't they just acquire I don't know if this is for Google
Wildfire.
Plus, but Wildfire.
Wildfire.
App. That probably
Wildfire.
Is Google Plus, right? It's a social media
Wildfire
tool.
Yeah, because Wildfire is all about managing social campaigns for advertisers, and that includes
and
Google
And that
Plus.
Was yesterday or the day before. I mean, that's very new.
And Mark Zuckerberg's sister works for it, so now she's at Google and he's at...
that's interesting. Yeah. Randy is now at Google.
It's his other sister.
No, it's his other sister.
Oh, it's not Randy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Randy's busy doing the Silicon Valley reality TV show.
Right.
Oh, yes.
That's going to win her fans
and
friends.
It's Ariel, I think is her name.
Ariel. The other sister.
The other one.
Are there more? Is it just the two or three of them or what?
I think that's it.
Okay.
That's all I've ever heard about.
Well, I mean, you know, this is all Google as a whole too, right? I mean, Wildfire got bought by Google. I mean, it's going to be used for AdWords and, you know, and it'll probably be slices of it in Google Plus, but it's a Google acquisition.
I don't know what Wildfire is. Would you fill me in, Drew? What is Wildfire? What do they do?
Your favorite phrase, social media management tool. So basically if you're running all of the Twit accounts, if you're on, you know, your Facebook
like
account.
Like Hootsuite?
Bingo.
Okay.
Bingo. And monetizing and running campaigns and promotions. I mean, I wrote a piece about it. It was, you know, a little bit of a Trojan horse. Now Google's inside of Twitter and Facebook, and that's interesting.
Wait a minute. By getting Wildfire, this gives Google what inside of Facebook?
Well, it knows how companies' campaigns are running on other social platforms and how successful or unsuccessful they are.
So
right,
it could be about gathering data about how companies are using Facebook. Twitter.
Data or just making money off of other people's platforms, which they do with acquisitions.
So this is on the Wildfire blog. We believe that over time, the combination of Wildfire and Google can lead to a better platform for managing all digital media marketing. We continue to stay focused on helping brands run and measure their... Now, if you're a brand using Wildfire and it's now part of Google, does that make you nervous about how it's going to work with Facebook and Twitter? And Pinterest and LinkedIn, or do you go
still
what the
your
hell?
Money? Is Facebook going to say no? You can't buy an ad on our service.
Oh, you,
that's going to be the interesting point. Is Facebook going to cut them off? Right?
Yeah. They're cutting off revenue.
That could happen. Obviously, Wildfire says it's business as usual. Google says it's business as usual. We've heard that before. But any number of those services, Pinterest, Twitter, all the other services that Wildfire works with. They could go, hey, hold on a second. You know, we're going to monetize our platform. Go away. Especially if it's Google at the helm.
So
I don't think so. I think it's a service to advertisers. I mean, I talk to a lot of people in media, and when you get to some brands, they need help and services in trying to manage across multiple social platforms. It's another advertising way, and it's Google being rather, I think, lowercase c Catholic about this in saying that we will now recognize advertising. We'll place advertising elsewhere on the web. We'll share the money. We'll push revenue elsewhere where it's good for the advertiser.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a smart way to go.
They also, I mean, it's a kind of an interesting company that was founded, according to its own about page, in 2008 by Victoria and Allen, who were New Zealand-based adventure travel company. They wanted to give away free trips to fans, and then discovered doing it on Facebook required them to create an application. So they built one.
Right.
It was a week-long side project that turned into a venture of its own, its first product promotion builder. They had 10 clients by the fall of 2008. 4 years later, 16,000 businesses, including 30 of the 50 top global brands. Mm-hmm. Very interesting story, isn't it?
Mm.
And what did it sell for, guys? I think it was between 200 and 250 million.
Wow, good for them.
Yeah, around 250.
Good for them.
Yeah. It's an interesting acquisition.
I have to think that there is something that Google's thinking that, well, yeah, this gives us a window into how these 30 out of the 50 top global companies are planning social media interactions and purchases and marketing on the other guy's site.
Right.
And I could see why Facebook may say,
we shall see, right?
Could be. It could also be an enterprise play. Not strictly enterprise, but it seems like Google's always looking for a reason or a way to get into the enterprise space because there's so much on the consumer side. I just wonder if it's a way for them to, you know, have a bigger play in this market. Maybe they just see it as a growing market and they're like, you know what, let's scoop them up and then we'll, hey, who knows ads better than Google? So now, Mr. XYZ company, you know, come to us and we'll handle all of your social media marketing, you know, efforts.
Right. And well, analytics is a huge part of this too, with Google Analytics being able to track all those things in one place. It's a huge plus for the brands. I think Google adds a lot of value.
Yeah, but I've got to imagine the tropes. Go ahead.
One of the tropes in my world these days is that media companies have to become agencies. Everybody has to become a media company. The media companies have to become agencies. And it's a little bit overdone, but it's true that rather than selling space and time to the advertiser, you've got to sell return on investment. You've got to sell services. You've got to be able to help them in their digital life all around. And they're too busy to go to 10 different places. And he or she who can offer digital as a whole, wisely packaged, and be able to optimize across these platforms by having knowledge of what's going on across those platforms is going to have something valuable. So I think it's a very smart purchase on Google's behalf. And I think it's something, it doesn't exclude other people from doing the same thing, but it's something they need to offer. And again, they're going to offer revenue to other players, which is a really interesting counterintuitive thing. Come to Google to buy Facebook.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, if there were any question about Google's commitment to Google Plus, maybe this would change your mind. Google has replaced those Gmail video chats you might have done with Hangouts on Google Plus. We continue with that slow movement towards everything being a part of Google Plus. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt that Google is totally committed to the success of Google Plus, even though there's no evidence that Google Plus is anything anybody wants except for a handful of
Did you see Guy Kawasaki?
Guy loves it. Guy loves it.
And Guy did this whole thing this last week of he says that when Apple was down in the dumps with consumer review points, he raised this whole thing to provide the counterweight to all the arguments against Apple. And so now he's basically written a cheat sheet for how you can defend Google Plus against all these critics.
Well, so why do you need to defend Google Plus if it's doing so damn well?
Well, let's think about what well means. And what is the correlation? Is this a Google Plus versus Facebook thing? It doesn't have as many users as Facebook, therefore it's a failure, which is a lot of what reporters
But I think that's obviously, we know better. That's not about the number of users. It's about the amount of engagement.
Well, how do you track the engagement? That's the frustrating part.
Well, you don't. And the only thing I'm reporting is in my own experience that nobody I know or care about is on Google Plus.
Mm-hmm. I'm there. I've got some people there who are great. Hey, yeah. Hey, I'm there. Mike Elgin's there. I find good conversation there still when I put stuff up there. It's mixed, but I find it's good and better than my blog.
Yeah, I find way, way better conversation on Google Plus than I do anywhere else.
I don't deny that.
And the other thing I think the reason like people like Guy Kawasaki and other, I guess, Google Plus fanboys like myself, people that really love it, want to get more people to come over.
My problem is I give up too early.
Maybe.
I gave up.
Yeah, maybe.
And, I love Google Plus. I love Buzz. I'm an idiot. I loved Buzz. But and I just don't want to waste energy on a platform that is moribund. And I guess, you know, if we could make it work, it's great. But you know what my conclusion is after thinking about this for a while is it's too complicated. People want hit and run social media. They want to go on. They want to post a status update. They want to scan pictures and then move on. Mm-hmm. And Google Plus, you're right, is there's more engagement. That's the problem. Could it be. Requires too much participation.
I don't know about
that. But I go there for different things.
My usage of Google Plus is extremely different. I mean, the reason why I'm bullish on Google Plus is because it doesn't require a lot of my time. I feel like Twitter needs that babysitting. That's the groove I'm in with Twitter. Facebook, for me, has so many features and so many things going on, I don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. So when I use Google Plus, I feel more comfortable because check my notifications, I can add something, I can do a search, and then I can bolt. Right.
The tagline for you is Google Plus, the social network you can ignore.
It's not a social. It's not a social network.
Oh, it's not. Ah, maybe I misunderstand it. Then it's not a social network. What is it?
It's a social layer, and people want to say that's PR crap. Google's never referred to it as a social network. The idea of a social network, people attach that to Facebook. Facebook is a social network. MySpace is a social network. Well, guess what? Neither of those companies have the footprint that Google does in other verticals and areas, right? So when you think about integrating these social features in other products, very successful products, that to me says they're the company's just fine with making their product social. You know, you don't put plus features in YouTube, which is an extremely popular and successful property, and then say, well, it's not doing too well, so we're going to have to yank it all back. You don't do that. It's not a zero or one. It's not a turn on, turn off. Yeah. It's not buzz.
I don't know.
I have this vision of Prince when he changes his name to the Ankh. We're soon going to say plus the site formerly known as Google.
It is like That's that, good. Isn't it? It's the site formerly known as Google.
I just put up guys down at the bottom of the rundown. I put up guys' post and some of his arguments and links, if you care.
You know, and I know people say, oh, you know, I'm being hard on it. I want it to succeed, but I just feel like I get the feeling, having been through this a number of times, most recently with Buzz, that it's going in the wrong direction.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think
good.
For Facebook, I feel like that's the place I go to hang out with family, you know, family, friends, things like that. But especially for like what we do when we're building an audience and we have people that want to follow us and see what we're talking
there's
about.
Nothing better than Facebook for that.
I think Google Plus is way better for that because I have people that follow me on Google Plus and they are engaged and they chat and it draws them into what I'm doing. I started a hangout. In fact, kind of getting back to what we were talking about adding the hangouts in, there was an outage on GTalk the other day, and I wonder if it was when they were starting some integration.
Yeah,
I think they were starting to integrate at that point. Maybe that's why the outage. No, they haven't really said, I don't think. But anyway, so as part of that, I said, well, I'm going to start a hangout to see if it's connected, right? So let's see if hangouts actually work. So I started a hangout, and right away, I noticed that like three or four of the people that are always following me or commenting on my posts and things like that were like right in there in the hangout, and they were, hey, it's so good to talk to you. It's so good. I would have never had that experience on Facebook ever.
But yeah, if it works on people Google+. Like Lauren Weinstein is just a brilliant user of Google Plus. He just has great, great stuff. Mike Elgin, obviously. Mm-hmm. Suddenly forgetting her name, the teacher who is the mother-in-law of Sergey. I'll remember it in a second. But there are some people who are really masters of Google Plus, and they share things well, and they use it in kind of a proper form, using photos, using the kind of the right length, the kind of right recommendation to share. And it's an impressive platform in a way.
There is one Google product that is definitely dead. Definitely. I have no... Well, we'll find out in just a second when we continue. Our guest, Drew Olenoff from thenextweb.com. Aaron Newcomb. How should I introduce you?
Let's say the source show.org. Yep.
Regular on Floss Weekly, yep. All about Android. Good to have you here. Also, Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com. But first, a word from our folks at Squarespace.com. The new Squarespace is here. The new Squarespace. You know, I feel like Steve Martin jumping up and down, but really, truly, this is something we've been waiting for some time. I've been a beta tester on Squarespace 6 for a few months. I know there's people who've been working on it for a year or more, and that's because Squarespace really wanted to get this right. A brand new code base. This isn't just, you know, a few new features. This is a new code base, 50-plus new features. Huge move into the 21st century. For instance, things like the new thing everybody's talking about, responsive design. When you put a image into your Squarespace page, Squarespace automatically generates images of 6 or 7 sizes so that when, here, there it is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, so that whatever device comes to that page, they don't have a special mobile page. The page automatically resizes. The images are appropriate for that specific device. It's just things like that make such a difference to your users, to you. The ability to drag and drop your layout to create a unique looking page, of course, for all the great templates. There are 50 plus new or improved features in the new Squarespace. Incredible. The new layout engine. You can share your social media accounts. Plug that in. Of course, if you're a blogger, it's awesome. You can even drag and drop things like Google Maps into your blog. I just think that is so cool. To have that as part of the image palette in your blog. I want you to try this. Now, the nice thing, as always, with Squarespace is it couldn't be easier to try it. Just visit squarespace.com, and you will see on there a try it link. 2 weeks, absolutely free. Squarespace.com. Let me close this video so you can see where we're talking about here. It says get started now. That's it. Get started. And 2 weeks absolutely free of Squarespace. If you decide you like it, and only if you decide you like it, then get out your credit card and take a look at the pricing, because it's really kind of amazing. $8. This is if you buy a yearly plan. They do have monthly plans. It costs just a little bit more, $10 month to month. But get the yearly plan, because it really is. That's the best savings. $16. And what do you get for $16 a month when you pay for a yearly plan? Unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors, unlimited. There's no limit. I don't know of any hosting company that can offer this kind of value and the amazing content management system that's Squarespace. So give it a try. 2 weeks free. If you decide you like it and you decide to buy, use our offer code TWIG8 and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. That's why, another reason why the annual plan's a best deal. And one more thing, when you get an annual plan, they will give you a free domain registration so you can have your custom domain and do all the back end hookup so that you don't have to. It makes it very straightforward to create a custom domain, do the whole thing. Soup to nuts, Squarespace is the best. I want you to try it. The new Squarespace, squarespace.com. Give it a try today. And make sure you use the offer code TWIG8 if you decide to buy. We're talking Google, the cloud, Facebook, and the queue. I guess we don't have to worry about the queue anymore. I guess that's it on the Google queue.
For now.
It's
I don't
coming.
Know. What do you think? I think it sounds like it's dead, dead, dead.
I think it might be. It's an embarrassment. I mean, I guess better for them that they pulled off. And the news is, by the way, that the Google queue is not going to come out right now. They heard the bad reviews. They're going to kind of give away what they have to people who asked for them.
Well, and then but more than that, if you pre-ordered it off, I don't know how many people that could be, for $300, mm-hmm. they're just going to send you one.
Yeah.
That, to me, sounds like they're not...
A dev version, yeah.
They're going to say, you know, we're sorry you ordered one. You have one for free on us. Sounds to me like that's the end of the line.
You know, I mean, we talked about this on All About Android a few weeks ago. I mean, it was just too little for too much. You know, too little functionality for $300. I mean, you've got products like the Ooh Yeah coming out.
That's good. Well, now, okay.
For $100.
Coming out? Or it got its
almost
Kickstarter money.
Kickstarter.
There's a
it's
big,
almost done with Kickstarter.
As somebody who's invested in over a dozen Kickstarter right. products, of which I've only received one, coming out, it's a little ways from that. But right. I agree with you. Ooh Yeah will be an
Let's
interesting
just say
product.
It looks like it's going to be very successful.
They got a lot, $10 million plus
dollars.
They've
got a ton of people that have signed up. And a ton, not only that, not just people that have signed up that want one, but partners. Right, so people
right.
like
they have partners now for the
even year? Vivo, whatever the movie, the music video.
Is oh, Vivo, yeah.
They even signed up today. They said,
wow.
They've got a Final Fantasy III is coming out for it. I signed up for one, so I've been getting all the news. Right, they send you the newsletter about every other day.
So Ooh Yeah is was a Kickstarter project. They raised an amazing amount of dollars, $6 million. They asked for less than $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's not done yet. They have seven days still
One
to go.
More week.
And the idea was it was an open source Android gaming platform for $100.
Right. Yep. Plugs into your TV. I mean, much like the Queue, plugs into your TV, comes with a controller.
Is this everything the Queue should have been?
I think it's everything the Queue should have. Now, of course, they're concentrating on gaming, but if it comes with the Android platform, there's no reason you can't install Netflix and things like that, unless for some reason they do something to lock those apps out, but I don't think they will. So you get all these great gaming platforms designed for the box, and you get all the Android functionality that you, you know, kind of like a Google TV experience like you like. So you get all that stuff on a $100 box, and I think it's exactly what the Queue should have done. And unfortunately, they missed on it, and that's why they pulled it. I'm sure it was really hard for them over there to pull the Queue. I mean, they gave it a lot of airtime on the at I.O., and I'm sure it was really hard for them to do that and then pull back. But that was the right decision. I think it was absolutely right.
In fact, it shows
it was
a lot of
the only product
class.
At I.O. where people walked away and were confused.
Yeah.
They weren't exactly sure what to do with it, and Google's response was, well, it's open, and developers can build things on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is cool. I mean, it was hacked right away to run Android. I think it was 4.0. It was hacked right away. This with a very easy hack. This guy hacked it and hooked it up, and he was like, "Look, now I can watch Netflix on my Queue," which I couldn't do, you know, with the way it was shipped. So,
and maybe that's where the future of the Queue is kind of a hackable device. The Monarch in our chat room is pointing out that Ooh Yeah comes with its own marketplace. does not come with Google Play, but you could root it, but then you would lose the Ouya marketplace but gain Google Play.
Right.
So really the Q was an official Google Play device that had music sharing and some nice features, had an amp built in.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing, if it had been $100, I think it might have been a competitive product.
I think so. Yeah,
it was a price.
They're selling on eBay for everywhere from $175 to $500. Buy it now.
Wonder how that's working out for them.
And it's heavy. Yeah. The thing's ridiculously heavy. I think when I was on the show, when I was out at the, you know,
you brought yours. Yeah.
I like the picture on The Verge, how they have a picture of it as a doorstop. They're using it as a doorstop.
Yep.
It's pretty clever.
It's a subtle, they don't say that, but it's this very subtle way of saying,
Yeah.
I have to admit, when I heard the price, even at Google I.O., when I heard the price, I said, that's a non-starter. That's just too expensive for something that has such, you know, kind of confusing functionality.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's heavy is it has a 25-watt amplifier in it, so it has to have a big transformer in there. Yeah, it makes me a little bit sad.
Yeah.
Because there was some neat design stuff. It was made in the USA, which is probably why it was a little pricier than you might have liked.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Consumers showing once again that, if it's a choice between spending a little extra and enslaving Chinese children, let's enslave the children.
Yeah. No, that was admirable of them to do a, you know, USA manufactured, you know, try to create some jobs here in the good old USA.
Yeah.
But, it was just too much.
I don't know if it created any jobs.
Well, not anymore.
You know who's creating jobs?
I think it created a lot of severance.
Yeah, right. You know who's creating a lot of jobs? YouTube. They have decided, according to the Wall Street Journal, remember they had the $100 million fund for channels. They were going to have 100 channels. Felicia Day's Geek and Sundry is an example of those channels. Phil DeFranco has a channel. They ended up seeding those channels with $150 million. According to the journal, it's such a success. 8 months later, the company is going to put another $200 million in. Not clear whether that's $200 million going to the existing 100 channels or if they're going to add channels. I think this is very interesting. That means it's a success. Now, I have to say, there are 100 channels and I don't know where they are. Am I missing something? Did Shaquille O'Neal launch his channel yet?
I think you're right. It's rather Kickstarter-ish.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people doing really well by creating and curating their content and engaging people on the platform. And
well, I'd say where they're doing well is by cashing that check from Google. Right?
That too.
I mean, and people are getting anywhere up to $5 million to start these channels.
Mm.
Incidentally, I'm just going to throw my hat into the ring, Google. Actually, I don't know if they are going to open this up to new channels, but we've already decided as a company that's something we'd like to assay. What we realize is YouTube does not want us on YouTube or YouTube Live because we have our own advertising model, right?
Mm.
And they want to sell ads. They don't want to have to compete with our own interstitial ads. So could we, if they gave us, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, create our own content specifically for YouTube? Would it be worth our while? You bet. Why not?
Yep.
You know, and
short form, maybe a little bit shorter.
It would be absolutely short form. The requirement, I'm told, is 40 hours a year. I think we could do that.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Hey, give me a couple million, I'll make 80 hours a year.
Yeah.
I think we'd center, you know, just put together the package piece, the best of, and
I would probably, maybe, yeah, that's one thing, and we certainly would do that, but I think because it would help promote us, but I think we'd also create new content for the YouTube medium. I'm becoming more and more of a fan of the idea, and I know people have always told me this because I used to cross post to Twitter and Facebook. Do something appropriate for that medium. When you're tweeting, tweet. Yeah. When you're on YouTube, YouTube. When you're doing Twit, do 8 hour shows.
What's appropriate for YouTube, you think, Leo? What makes it right besides not pixelating the way I do?
I don't know. We were talking before the show about how disappointed I was that we took this really big chance and I thought made a great show, our gaming show Game On, and we couldn't make it financially viable. So I may not be a good judge of what people want to see. I thought people wanted to see that. But my guess would be on YouTube, short. I think what we're going to do is short how-to stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's really what we should do.
I think that's a great idea. But, you know, there are other things on there, like tabletop. This is the Geek and Sundry stuff.
The tabletop gaming tabletop, that Will Wheaton does is doing well. And it's longer form.
I wouldn't call that short form.
Right. So, but it has Will Wheaton.
But it has Will Wheaton and, yeah, occasionally some other stars of various sci-fi programming. So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's more interesting. But
Geek and Sundry, which, of course, Tom Merritt and Veronica do a show on there called Sword and Laser, has 16 million video views, 280,000 subscribers. It's got Felicia Day. It's really the Felicia Day channel, so that helps. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of good things. Actually, one of their breakout hits is this written by a kid, where a kid talks through a script, and then they get the best, the biggest, the one that was the most popular was the Rhett and Link did a written by a kid episode. That's hysterical.
It is.
It's called, let me see if I can find it, Goth Boy. And they and what they do is they not only they get three or four videos out of it. So they get the making of Goth Boy, Goth Boy. But let me see how long these are. They're not very long.
No, those are short form.
Yeah. Goth Boy is 2 minutes, 55 seconds. By the way, pre-roll on most of this. This does not have pre-roll for some reason.
Could you tell everyone your name, please?
And then the pop-up videos. This is how Google's monetizing it. And I presume because they made so much money, you know, they put in $150 million and they got there. If they're putting another $200 million in, that tells me it's
paid
working.
Off.
It paid off. Yep. Right? Unless they're doubling down on a weak hand, but I can't imagine them doing that.
Well, this is the company that made The Queue.
and killed it quickly.
Yeah. That's the
Larry Page touch, by the way. I think credit to Larry Page. He is not going to suffer fools gladly. He is not going to suffer weak products. He's just going to go, move, next.
And I think this ties in with, and I know we're going to get to this in a minute, but the Google Fiber thing, right?
Because that is a story.
They want to provide content to their new audience, basically.
Right.
And they're going to have a difficulty because they're competing with all the cable stuff. And they're like, oh, you're going to bypass the cable networks? You know, they're not going to – cable networks, I don't know how much – there's a little bit of programming they're going to get, but not much.
Let's talk about what Google is offering with this Google Fiber because it is more than we thought. So you remember about, what is it, 6 months ago, a year ago, Google had a campaign. What city – we're going to pick a city – would like us to wire it with fiber, gigabit fiber. And we tried to do it here in Petaluma. It would have changed my business model. But we also, many other cities, Topeka, Kansas, renamed itself Google Kansas. There was a really a strong competition. But it turned out it also had to do with the utility infrastructure, things like that. And Kansas City, Missouri won. And Google is now they're not installing it yet, right? The first thing they're doing is really smart, is a campaign. You have to say, I will take it, if you're in the affected areas, and give them $10. And then if enough people in that neighborhood, they call it the fiberhood, do the same, then Google will roll into that fiberhood. So
it's brilliant. It's
really brilliant. It's, talk about good
like
marketing.
Like Kickstarter. It's
But I mean, Google.
The interest there. It's interesting. Yeah.
There's also a $300 construction fee to get the fiber from the curb to your house as well.
But in some cases, they waive that.
Okay, good.
They have 39 days, 7 hours, and 57 minutes left to Kansas. Oh, by the way, it looks like it's Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, yes.
What?
What?
What's the bunny?
That's the fiber bunny. It's got very hot haunches, apparently. Maybe that's not infrared. I don't know.
I don't care where it is. I'm moving there.
I know. I want
to get it.
I'm ready.
You have to rally your neighbors to pre-register. September 10th, they'll announce the results. Now, what's surprising is how much you get. Tell us about the pricing here.
So 70. So either package, they have two packages, and either one that
there's
you get.
There's a free package,
too. And there's a free package that includes 5 megabits per second down and 1 megabit per second
up. So the free package is better than your DSL provider.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Good start.
And then if you go with, there's a $70 per month package that gets you broadband only, or a $120 package that gets you broadband plus TV.
Now, let me say something. When you say broadband only, you're talking about a gigabit.
Gigabit down.
And
up. Of course, what they say.
A symmetric gigabit.
Right. Mm. Right. Which is, I mean, yeah, exactly. You see Leo's response here. That is, I mean.
And those two packages, they waive the $300 fee.
If you do that, right.
If you do it. Okay, good.
So let me just say, we have 150 megabits, 1/8 as much coming into the brick house for about, I think we pay $4,000 or $5,000 a month for that.
Jesus.
So it's a seventh of the speed for a lot more. I don't know. I can't even do the math. I'm so boggled. 40 right. times the price.
And if you want the 5 megabit, then you pay the $300 installation fee.
And you pay nothing ever again. And that's it. Well, I think it's for a couple of years it's guaranteed. Ah. Although we know how Google does that. You know, they give themselves an out. Now, what do you get with TV? Do they have actual contracts with cable company or whatever?
It includes, and now this is from The Verge, this is what they say, it will include major broadcast network, hundreds, in quotes, fiber channels, and on-demand movies and shows. But what I haven't seen, and maybe this is in one of the other articles here, but I haven't seen actually how they're going to deliver this.
Well, you got a gigabit. They have these three boxes. Well, there's a TV box, there's a DVR storage box, and then there's the network box. You also, we forgot to mention, they throw in a Nexus 7 tablet as your remote control.
Right, right.
I love that.
And isn't there a Google Drive tie-in somehow?
Oh, yeah, you get a terabyte of Google Drive space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, why not? Throw it in.
Now, I'm looking at the Google. This is the Google Fiber webpage, and it says all your favorite channels and more. And it looks like they have, in fact,
done the deals.
You can pay extra and get HBO, Skinemax, Stars, Showtime. But it looks like you've got, well, it says Google Fiber is always getting better. We're constantly adding new channels. So clearly, they've got the Discovery channels. They've got Comedy Central. That's good. They've got C-SPAN 3.
Like basic cable.
It's kind of like basic
cable.
For the
grandmas, they don't have phones, which is going to be an issue.
No phone. They don't have CNN. They don't have MSNBC. They've got Bravo, but they don't have AMC. So there are gaps. You can't watch Breaking Bad. They have MTV. But I think this is early, right? Who knows what will happen when they roll out.
Oh, I would take it in the flash.
And with a gigabit up and down, you've got plenty of room to have very good HD content and still have virtually unlimited bandwidth.
What I'm wondering, and again, I should have researched this a little bit more, is are these boxes Motorola boxes?
They don't look like it, but that's an interesting question.
I wonder if the technology inside came from Motorola.
They own them. Might as well.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. So maybe there was a little bit more to this Motorola acquisition.
The TV box looks a lot like the Sony Google TV that they just announced, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They've got to make a to handle that speed. I mean, don't forget, cable boxes are the dumbest beasts on earth.
This is purpose built.
This has to be new.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some known card throw into the box, and the loss on this hardware has
the network box also has 3x3 MIMO antennas and AO2.11ab, G, and N with dual concurrent radios. I mean, this is state of the art.
This is serious equipment.
Not AC, but at least N.
Yep.
All I could say is what. My real question, though, is this a business for Google that they plan to put in other cities, or is this a neener, neener, neener to ISPs warning them you ought to do better, or we could. You know, Google's never going to say if it's not really a plan to go into other cities. This may be a huge money loser. We don't know.
I think it's the latter. I think you can see the feature stories coming. It says, wow, look what they have in Kansas City. And everybody gets jealous. And we have yet another reason to be really mad at our cable companies. Not that they care.
Yeah, I think it's an experiment. I mean, I really think it's
an
experiment.
You don't think this is a business?
Experiment or demonstration? Which do you think?
There is a difference there. I would say it's an experiment at this point. I would say it's still in the experimental phase.
So what do they want to learn? If it's an experiment, demonstration is neater, neater. Experiment is they want to learn things. What do you think they want to learn mostly?
Well, I think that they're learning. I mean, they already started deploying a lot of fiber between their own data centers, right? So they've got a lot of experience in doing fiber. I think this is an experiment to say, look, we think we can take this to the next stage. Let's pick a city and see if we can actually deploy it, number one, right? So you've got the technical requirements. Does it work? Can we deliver the service? But then the big question is, does it make money? Does it pay off? And I think that's the experimental part. Is this going to – I think this is a – experiment to see whether they can actually do this at scale and turn it into a business model.
They do have. I might make a trip.
Yes, I think that's right.
I got to check tickets to Kansas City. They have opened the Google Fiber Cafe, where you can relax and enjoy refreshments and discover your fiberhood.
They have a couple Chromebooks there.
Good old fiber.
Did they make that word up?
They did.
Fiberhood.
It says it. Discover your fiberhood.
Well, I mean, you know, this feeds into all of their products and all of their services, connecting the, you know, the world's information. You know, if they can wire everybody up with super fast internet, the peer-to-peer capabilities are just crazy, insane, and mind-boggling.
Does it make them money?
Not the issue. The more people use the internet, the more Google makes. That's
so they don't
the
have
rule
to worry
they've
about
said
it
before. It's just plain true.
Just use it, and we'll worry about the rest.
Nexus 7, they're losing money on it for a reason, because it's a signal generator. They are gonna, the more we use it, and by the way, I love it, the more they make money. Period. That's the rule.
That's a good business model. I like it.
It is. It is.
Just you know, eat as many as you want. We'll make more.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm just, it's makes the, it's no question that there's kind of general widespread awareness of this, even among the regular public, that it makes people want it. They're getting very, you know, antsy. They're saying, well, why can't we have that?
I mean, Google really should do, when it's in, they really should do a junket like Hollywood does and bring in tech people and have them come into homes and talk to little Johnny and then grandma and what they're doing with it.
Hi, I'm George
Clooney. You can just imagine.
How is your fiberhood?
I want every tech conference to automatically be in Kansas City now. Like, can we move South by Southwest to Kansas City? You know,
South by BBQ.
Okay. I mean, it's pretty clear. I guess it's pretty clear that everybody wants it. It's unclear whether Google is making money on this, or there is a business model that makes sense. It's also unclear whether Google's plan is to extend this anywhere past this area.
You can expect cable companies to come in and argue that this is an oligarchic move on Google's part and trying to prime the notion the economics are unrealistic and impossible.
Well, you know, what I haven't seen is any counter-programming from other ISPs yet. I wonder.
Of course not. Because they know Google's not going to move right now, and so they don't move.
Right.
I mean,
it's the airline model. Keep you prisoner.
Yeah, and they were, I mean, I remember they fought pretty heavily against some of the other cities that were trying to do, implement their own fiber services in towns. Wasn't it Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, maybe, did their own fiber?
Philly, right?
And
but
I remember
don't want towns to do it.
Yeah.
And, well, the other thing is, it is happening, though. I'm wrong on this. Oh, God, the pixelation. So Verizon is now offering, the higher speeds. And the competitors to Verizon are stepping up there. On the one hand, that's good news. On the other hand, it's bad news because it does start to create this precedent of having to buy the tiers. And what's interesting about Google is beyond the basic level, once you buy the 100 or the gig, it's unlimited. They put no limits on you. And that's a fundamentally different model from where the cable companies are headed, which is to try to tier you in speeds and then probably in usage.
Well, I'm just surprised that the cable companies must believe that Google is not a threat, or they would be counter-programming this, maybe. Yes?
I just think they feel like they've got such a big lead right now. Wait and see. Let's just see what happens.
But I bet you they're preparing ads right now. What would an anti-Google fiber ad say?
Oh, well, you see it right now. You see it with...
what could it possibly say?
Verizon. Well, but they see they argue against you in my market. You watch Cablevision argue against Verizon and see people come back, or they have this frustration, or they don't have this, they don't have that. And then you see the argument against satellite and Dish. So they do a lot of negative political campaigning against each other in this market.
Right.
Because I'm in an overbuilt market and I have Verizon.
Or does Comcast, Verizon, AT&T go to their man in Washington? Because this is what they did against Civic Wi-Fi, right?
Right.
In Pennsylvania, Philly, they
What's
rolled
the
out
against
the Wi-Fi. Well, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter. You just make one up. They rolled out Wi-Fi, and so Verizon and Comcast went to Congress and said, So here's the story they made up for this one. They said, well, if the governments get into the business, that's very anti-American because they're kind of undermining. Big, businesses' ability to make money in a market, and government shouldn't be competing with us. And they got laws. They got laws in almost every state of the union. They didn't do it in Congress. They did it locally, saying you can't have civic Wi-Fi.
But Google's not government yet.
Well, Google is a trust, is a monopoly, and they're using their monopoly on the internet to foster, to get into a business that is they do not belong in. And I think the FTC should investigate this.
It's probably a dumping argument.
That'll happen, of course.
How long before the FTC investigation?
The second it gets installed in someone's house in Kansas City, Missouri, or whatever.
Why am I giving them ideas? I'm sorry.
The FTC or the FCC?
Well, the FTC is gets involved in antitrust. Right, could the FCC be in?
I think the FCC would be completely for this, right? Because there's the whole competition.
It's their broadband plan. It's their national broadband plan.
Exactly. Not only that, but you know, basically, these cable companies have a monopoly in these markets. It's not nationwide, but most places you can only get one cable. I can't get two different cable companies, right? Most places you get Comcast or you get Time Warner or you get something else. Now, with Google coming in, you get, not only are there the cable companies and DSL, but now I've got this Google thing.
Yeah.
I mean, competition is good, especially for this type of thing.
Oh,
so,
we want it.
I think
remember,
FCC would
it was
weigh in
the
and
FCC
say, yes,
that,
this is actually good.
It was the FCC.
No,
they gave
anti-trust.
These companies their monopolies and duopolies.
That's true.
Saying, well, you know, if you're going to install copper in the ground, you have to own that market forever and ever and ever. So who knows?
I think they've turned around, at least with this administration.
I hope so. Yeah, they've got the national broadband plan. They recognize the need to get internet everywhere, even in rural areas where there's no money to be made. And they recognize the need for competition. I think the FCC perhaps even recognizes that they blew it.
Yeah.
And they need to right that wrong.
Here's where you're right. I think you'll have Congress. Somebody in Congress will come and do a Saturday press conference saying that this is unfair competition and dumping of technology on a market by the monopolistic Google, and they'll ask for investigations.
Right.
That's why you see this play out.
Dumping, that's it. It's
just
dumping.
Look at the list of who gets the most money from the cable companies, and that's who'll be calling the press conference.
Somebody in the chat room said they saw on Google Plus that somebody in the area is already being offered 6 months of free showtime if you don't switch away from our fine cable company.
Interesting.
Let it begin.
Oh, I don't know. Weeds is worth holding on to.
Well, God, I'd love to live in Kansas City. Even if you don't get the fiber, you're going to have people throwing money at you saying, don't switch. We'd hate to have a happy neighborhood of fiberhood users. Here's the ad. This is the fiber ad that they were airing in some of those markets. We're looking at a street. A guy's coming down it on a little moped. And he's stopped in front of a home. He's looking around. He looks kind of like the guy from Breaking Bad. Oh, really fast broadband is the guy. That's the really fast broadband guy. He's going to... Wait a minute. Here comes a motorcycle. There's a motorcycle. And I would guess this would be even faster broadband. Google Fiber. Ah, okay. Google Fiber is on a motorcycle. Comcast is on a moped. Oh, they're going to race. They're going to race. And there goes the moped. Putting along. Motorcycle. Huh. That's kind
pretty
of
a low production value.
Kind of a pedestrian ad. Really wants Google Fiber, it says.
Cops don't like motorcycles, though.
Yeah, motorcycles. Is that really the ad? Google Fresno.
What?
Oh, this was no. This was
oh,
their
this
campaign.
Was not a. This was not. This was Fresno. No wonder.
Oh, that was part of their bid to
okay,
get.
Okay, cut
to
that out. Forget I mentioned it. I was misinformed. Fresno. Google Wallet overhauled support for major credit and debit cards. Ah,
big news.
Big news. Now, a new remote disable feature as well. So if somebody steals or you lose your phone, you could disable a Google Wallet. That'd certainly be a concern for some people. So it's an NFC-enabled app. And for the first few months, it was Citibank only, right? You had a Citi card.
Right.
Or the Google had their own gift card, basically, type thing.
But I have a Google account. But that wouldn't work, right?
No, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
No.
So now MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover credit and debit cards all supported. Wow. I'm going to download Google Wallet. Do I have to have a Nexus phone? Can I put it on a regular Android phone? As long as it has NFC, right?
It has to have NFC, and they actually announced several different phones that this would work for now that it wasn't working for before.
I have my Galaxy S3. Can I put it on there? It's got an
NFC. I believe so.
And by the way, it says now anything you use with Google Checkout will work. So if you have Google Checkout and it's working for you, good news.
Yep. So that's the big difference, is that before they were kind of like two separate systems.
Yeah, I didn't even bother downloading it because I don't have a city card.
Right. One that you could use before, and then you got that free $10 Google card. And so I was putting money on that, and then I had to, my phone broke, actually. And I got another phone. Well, the Google Wallet is tied to your phone.
Right.
So I actually had to call a special number and get that money transferred over. Luckily, I thought about it before I sent the phone back, because your account number, the only way you can get that is on the phone. Just a heads up for those of you replacing your phone if you're using Google Wallet.
And if you lose your phone, so you should write your account number down.
Yeah, I think there's a way to get it back. You know, if you call them and you're like, you know, I don't have my phone anymore, you can go through the trouble and get your account number and everything.
I have my stapler.
There's ways to do it, but it's just a hassle. But this is great news. And the fact that they allow you to remotely disable, unfortunately, Google Wallet is not yet available for your device or mobile network.
Oh, that's a unlocked Galaxy S3 on AT&T.
That's probably why.
What do you mean that's probably
why? Well, if it's the unlocked version, did you get that
overseas? What are you searching for, Leo? Google Wallet?
It won't work. I just installed it. It says I'm not supported.
You probably have to have the official.
I have to have like an official AT&T. One. This is the unlocked European one, and that's their punishment?
Yep.
I spent $650 on this phone, and they're punishing me?
There's ways around that, Leo, if you want me to help you out.
Should I root it?
Yeah. You can root it and make it work. But the thing that's cool about this is the fact that you can also remotely disable. That's a big feature, big security feature.
Yes.
And they've really needed that for a while now, because people lose their phones all the time. They get stolen. I think it's one of the more common things to steal right now. So,
it is huge.
Yep.
We talked about this a couple of months ago, that New York taxi cabs, if you leave a phone in a taxi cab, the cab driver could return it, could call the police, give it to them, or could drive it to this guy who stands there on the corner waiting for cab drivers to drive by with phones. And if you've wiped it, he'll give you, whatever, $20. If it's unwiped, he'll give you $50, because all the data that's still on there is really useful. Mm-hmm. So just a word of warning.
It'll definitely get consumers more comfortable with the idea of
Be able to wipe it.
Phone and it taking money from
Gotta be able to wipe it.
And mine is rooted. I have a unsupported version. Mine says unsupported device, but it actually works. And the new app is out now, so I'm going to have to go.
Now you have a Nexus.
Redo this. Yeah, this is a Galaxy Nexus.
So you would think that would not be a problem at all.
But this is Verizon's Galaxy Nexus.
So you have the opposite problem. You have a carrier phone. I have a non-carrier phone, but neither of us
them work.
But if I root this, I should be able to.
I believe it will.
All right, well, I'll try it.
I want to do a little research.
What about your
Nexus
7?
It's available for the Nexus 7 as well.
That has NFC?
Yes.
Yeah, it does.
All right, well, there you go. But the problem with this is it's Wi-Fi only, so it's going to be completely useless when I go to the coffee shop.
It'll still work.
Back pocket?
Wait a minute. It will still work without internet?
Yeah, I believe it'll still work, because what it does is it tells the chip on the device how much money you've got. And then it keeps. So there's two tracking mechanisms, one in the cloud and one on the device.
Dr. Mom is confirming what you said. Say again?
What am I looking up? Google Wallet?
Wallet, yeah.
Yeah, Google Wallet. There's a post in the...
It comes up with somebody else's.
Show notes. Hmm. Oh, you know what?
Oh, not... wait a minute. On the Nexus 7, they don't offer it. It's not showing up in the store on the Nexus 7.
Doesn't show up at all.
Oh, that sucks. Dr. Mom in our chat room, who has an official AT&T Galaxy S3... in a brilliant, beautiful nail polish red, by the way, says it does work on hers.
Yeah, it says
I found one customer. Congratulations, Dr. Mom. The balloons are coming down from the ceiling right now.
I want the red one. I'd buy the red one. All right, one more time. Here is the official, I hope so. If this is from the city of Peoria, I'm going to really be peeved. Google Fiber. Is this for Google Fiber? Google Fiber ad. One more time. Let's see.
This is the official one.
Modem sound, that's good. Always a good sign. Oh, these little car model is actually at the Fiber Cafe in Kansas City. You can go sue it. So there's a train going by with a song downloading, moving fairly slowly. Maximum speed, 56K. So that's the old days. That's modems. These cars are moving around. They're little play cars. I'm describing this for the home audience. And they're waiting and waiting and waiting. Because there's still
everybody's
a 56K.
Excited, it sounds probably.
I love the green light that's loading. That's hilarious.
Loading, and then the highway that you get on the information superhighway, and it's moving at a very there's a telephone. This is cute. This is actually a physical, real model that you can go see if you live in Kansas City, Missouri. Speed limit 10 megabits per second. Oh, things are speeding up. We're getting broad now. Mm-hmm. Things are getting better. Still a traffic jam, but your inbox at least is moving along. Little Gmail cubes there. Spam, uh-oh. Drawbridge up. 1 gigabyte, 1.5 gigabytes, 2 gigabytes, 2.2 gigabytes. This is a little container ship carrying data. Now we're going into tunnel, and here we go to Fiberland. Whee! Your speed, 1 gigabit per second. This is cute.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's just fun. And the song is, what? You've got just what I needed.
Yep.
The next chapter starts here, 100 times faster internet, 100 times the possibilities, googlefiber.com. Google.com/fiber. That was cute.
Yeah, it was good.
And they never say, you got what I needed. That's the subliminal.
Subliminal messaging, yeah.
It's just, you know, for some reason, I feel like that's just what I needed. I don't know why.
Me too.
We all do.
Fast.
We all do, my friend. Google has partnered with NFL.com for Google Hangouts. Just another one of the, but I tell you, this Hangout thing. It will power the NFL.com fantasy football experience.
New York Times has done
those things that if you're wondering whether, you know, Google is bullish on going social or not, I think doing a deal with the NFL and embedding Google Hangouts for fantasy football is a sign they're sticking with it. So you're going to see this everywhere on NFL.com.
Maybe Hangouts might be the real success of Google Plus.
But I don't find people are just spontaneously hanging out, which is what Google always hoped for.
Right.
They're pushing it with these deals. But the few times that I've gone in and said, oh, let me try to just hang out right now, nothing kind of really happens.
Well, who really wants to do that?
That's hard to believe. I mean, like I was saying before, with my experience was I started at one up, just made it public, and all these people came. I'm surprised, Jeff, with your, you know.
I haven't done it in a little while, but, you know, I've just found that it kind of just sits there.
Wow.
Maybe it's me.
No, I would expect the opposite.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarvis?
I hear enough of that guy.
The idea with this deal is you provide the context and the reason for chatting. They've expanded it to 12 people, so you can get your whole fantasy team in there and chatting and talking smack and doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
So
what do you think about that, Jeff? I mean, I heard you, it was yesterday on Marketplace, I think you were talking about something similar with Twitter.
What?
Well, the whole Twitter kerfuffle.
We haven't even gotten to that. Hashtag NBC fail, folks.
That and then the Twitter fail. I mean, the huge thing that the NBC fail hashtag is magnificently amusing. It's almost better than a badminton match. People are complaining about the opening ceremonies, about the tape delay, about stupid commentators, all kinds of things. And I got into a huge discussion about that. I've been in a huge discussion about this in terms of the models that, of course, people say, well, you idiot, Jarvis. Obviously, NBC has to force the audience to primetime because that's where the money is. Well, yeah and no. The thing is now that Twitter is a gigantic spoiler network and everybody knows what the results are long before, yet NBC's ratings have still been record. Now, they would argue this because they're forcing us there. I think that if people could watch the things they want to watch when they want to watch it, they would talk about it more in social and they'd have an even bigger audience. And in any case, NBC is not giving the people what they want when they want it, which is very disturbing.
So this is a Guardian reporter named Guy Adams.
Independent reporter.
Independent, sorry. Did what?
He went along and he kvetched. I'm actually, a few of us are very mad because then he was labeled the number one NBC fail hater. And by God, I wanted that gold medal myself. But Guy went and complained. And then finally he said, I'm going to forget the guy's name. He put in the email address of the executive in charge of NBC Sports, Gary Zelnick, is it? Zenkel. And he put in an email address. And the email address was pretty straightforward. It was firstname.lastname@nbcui.com, uni.com. And next thing he knew, his account was just killed. Now, then there was a lot of forensic effort to say, did he violate the rules?
Well, the terms of service say you're not allowed to reveal personal information
about
somebody.
Unpublished personal email. Well, the argument here was, number one, it had been published before. Number two, it was fairly standard. Number three, it was corporate. And then number four, Twitter, by its policy, is supposed to come to the user and say, there's been a complaint about you. Will you take this down before? And instead, they just cut it out. Then right. It comes out that Twitter said this was a result of a complaint from NBC, but then NBC said, no, no, no. Twitter came to us and told us to complain, and so we did.
Oh, because NBC and Twitter are, of course, in bed together. In fact, if you've watched the Olympics, you'll see full screen and, you know, hashtag Olympics with the Twitter logo and everything. I mean, there's definitely a nexus between the two.
So then the chief counsel of Google did finally, they finally reinstated Guy Adams.
Oh, they did. Yes, they did.
And they admitted that that what had happened here was someone in the commercial team had gone to NBC. And then the complaint team was not aware of this. So when a complaint came from NBC, they just automatically just did it. Now, they still violated it. And I think there's probably more lines of communication there than Twitter's admitting. So, you know, we're at stasis again now. The problems are that I don't think that I think that Twitter started down the road and did apologize and apologized for basically censoring content. And Twitter has done honorable things politically when it came to the Arab Spring, of course, and WikiLeaks and Occupy Wall Street. But when it came to a commercial relationship, this is the first test of their principles in church versus state. And they failed. And they failed pretty badly. I think.
And let me underscore that he was not in violation of terms of service. Even people might say, well, it's still an email address. But it's in the terms of service, it does say specifically, if information was previously posted or displayed elsewhere on the internet prior to being put on Twitter, it is not a violation of this policy. And that email address had been published. He offered to Twitter a link where it was clearly visible. So he did not, in fact, violate the terms of service at all.
Not coming to him, and they still haven't admitted all that was wrong. What they said was wrong was that we went and we proactively looked at content and then initiated this complaint. But I think there's a much bigger discussion here, obviously, about the responsibilities of a platform. That, and some people say to me, Jarvis, this is a business. It's not a free speech platform. No, it's a speech platform. And if speech there is not free, then we're not going to trust it. Then it's not a platform anymore. And it's not just used for silly complaints about tape delays on the Olympics. It's used for revolutions. It's used for journalism and information. It's used for people sharing information in crises. It's now something that we depend upon. And if we cannot trust Twitter to put us paramount above those sponsor economic relationships, then we can't trust it. Then it's not a platform. Right. And that is a discussion that we still have to have. Twitter went a long way, but the discussion ain't over, folks.
Right. And there's no us, there's no tweets, there's no sponsors, right? NBC came to Twitter because we're all there talking about things and, you know, mentioning things. And you can't have it, you can't decide, oh, we only want it when it's good. When it's bad, it's naughty and you should take action. And plus, there was already precedence on the site. Celebrities have tweeted people's phone numbers and email addresses because they were being stalked. And their accounts never disappeared. So this was clearly a sponsor over a user decision, like Jeff mentioned.
And what that means is they've got to come up with the culture. The irony here is I think that they've got to learn the lesson that newspapers had to learn long ago when sponsors came in to free us from ownership from political parties. And sponsors gave us independence. But we had to have independence from the sponsors in turn. So we built what we called church-state walls, that you couldn't do certain things, that you guaranteed no influence from the sponsor. Now, of course, newspapers have lost most of their trust. They've lost it for all kinds of reasons, like putting up crap and killing the products badly and not bringing the digital age and so on and so forth. So I'm not saying the newspapers are pure, but I am saying that this is a discussion that's been had. And the question becomes, really, is Twitter just a tech company? Well, no, Twitter's more than that now. It's something we depend upon. And this is where people like Dave Weiner will come along and say, well, you're getting what you reap what you sow here, folks.
That's right.
You're putting your lot, including journalism itself, in the hands of a private company.
And this is the whole thing with Bear Hug Camp. And we talked about this a lot. It's why I quit Twitter in the beginning, was I really felt like it was a silo and they didn't seem like they really cared. And that's why I supported Evan Prodromo's status.net, which was an open source federated version of Twitter that wasn't controlled by any one company. We signed up for it.
Yep.
We signed up for Twitter. Is there a precedent, Jeff, I wonder if there's a historical precedent, and as our resident historian, maybe you can invoke Habermas or Gutenberg, but is there a precedent for a private company becoming so critical is it AT&T perhaps? Critical to the nation and to the commonweal that it is suddenly held to a higher standard and is no longer able to act as a private company.
Right, but then there's the danger that I'm going to sound like a libertarian now, which I play one on TV, though I vote Democratic in the voting booth. I also want to be careful about that. I don't want government to come in and say, aha, now we have to take over and we have to have a role in this. And we're going to start to manage Twitter and Google and Facebook as public utilities. I don't agree with that either. I want to keep government out of this.
So that is the precedent. AT&T
is the precedent.
Private company, created long lines, created a way of communicating that became universal. And the government said, okay, now you're a utility and we regulate.
And the difference was that they were granted government polls and government, you know, space and franchises and so on, and Twitter has not been. But I do think that what has to happen, and I think it was Anil Dash who said, let's have a constructive discussion about this, and I agree. There needs to be a discussion with Twitter about what the principles are. What principles do we hold them up to? What standards do we hold them up to in our community? Because we're the ones who have to do this. And this is the argument I made, pardon for the plug, in public parts, that we have to have a discussion about the principles of the tools of publicness, what we're protecting from government, what we're protecting from the companies and interests, so that we also give companies something to hide behind. They can say, well, sorry, this is what we have to do. When I worked on newspapers, it was very convenient for a publisher to be able to say to a pissed off advertiser, I wish I could do something, but I can't, because here are the rules I operate under. And you got to understand that our asset is credibility, and that's why it has to operate this way. And I cannot go and influence that. Well, Twitter has to learn those same lessons. And I think we in technology have to hold some kind of discussion, some kind of sessions to be able to have that discussion. So it doesn't just happen inside Twitter. It happens around Twitter.
I really feel like I still want to get back to that idea of StatusNet.
Yep.
That we really ought to. Okay, granted, we might need some sort of internet-based signaling system that's as important as a phone system, but should it not be an open-source, federated system that no one company owns? That's what I've always thought. Mm-hmm. But of course, people go with what's convenient. Nobody else is aware of this issue.
Yep, that's the problem. I mean, Twitter is one of a handful of companies that I think is so ripe for a competitor like this, an open competitor.
StatusNet was really well done.
Yeah, It's so hard for them to get a foothold. Twitter has such a handle on all of their users.
It's the network effect. Once you have that critical mass of users, it's very difficult to unseat.
Well, now you see why they're spending so much time, and they have a team that works with NBC during the Olympics.
Right.
I mean, they've been building that relationship for years. So they have that relationship. It's not like someone's going to come along and say, hey, guys, you should put our hashtag or our symbol.
NBC is gonna, if they see somebody else become as, I mean, NBC is just following where we're going.
Yep.
So really, it's not NBC you have to convince. They're not going to march into some social network where nobody is. It's the people.
Yep.
But somebody asked me, I think it was Tanya actually a couple of days ago, well, is there going to be somebody that replaces Facebook as MySpace was replaced by Facebook, or that replaces Twitter? And I'm starting to think that we are getting now to the size where you will not see somebody come along. I think the same thing happened with Google.
Here's Leo, but here's the question. If you were Marissa seeing this, I think you start to see an opportunity. But I think that there was this, on the lineup earlier was Microsoft changing online mail. I think mail is essentially broken. I think Twitter needs a next generation. Is there an opportunity there to take the critical mass that she has and rethink?
But how is that any better than it's just another private company?
It's competition. At least it's competition. Now, Bill Gross has come along, and full disclosure, I'm a nano investor in what he's done in Uber Media. But he's basically, he would never put it this way, but he's kind of created a bit of a shadow Twitter. It hasn't taken off, but it feeds Twitter. It's another place where you can put things that have a life outside of Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think that's still possible. But what Twitter is going to do is it's going to keep shutting down its API. It's had ominous statements about shutting down the developers even more. Zuckerberg also said we may develop more things in-house. So what happens to the notion of a privately held platform? Is it even possible?
I mean, I would bring up Craigslist as another example, right?
Exactly. They're shutting down right now. Yep. That story this week. You want to tell about that?
Well, the fact that they're suing the developers of these third-party apps.
That, and then they're also putting new conditions on when you give them content that you're basically licensing it to them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, and all their Web 1.0 goodness.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know why there isn't another Craigslist. I mean, I love Craigslist. You know, I use it. It works. But I mean, why isn't there an alternative? There's so much I was thinking just after reading some of these third party stories about the third party developers and what they're trying to do. I mean, these are all things that Craigslist should be doing.
Right. Well, and hold on here for a second.
So instead of compete, instead of improve, instead of innovate, lock down.
Right.
Shut down.
So what competes with that? I say there's a few examples of this. Netscape was going to own web servers way back in the day. What came along? Apache. Microsoft was going to own browsers. What came along? Mozilla and Firefox.
That would be nice. And it took Mozilla a while to get traction. In fact, I remember thinking this is a failed open source project. They gave away the code. Nobody did anything to it for years.
Yep.
And they don't need to win the whole market to have the good influence that they have. Now, what are the names of the kids who did the Kickstarter project? Or what's the
Diaspora.
Diaspora, which, of course, didn't go anywhere with Facebook. Is there a way to create something that's big enough to keep Twitter honest and even give them cover to say, well, you know, folk, stockholders, we have to do this because look at our competition.
Right. I guess the market's big enough you could divide it in half. You know, we created a status net. I think we still have it, a status net stream called the Twit Army. Mm-hmm. And it didn't get traction because you go where people are, even if it's your Twit crowd. It wasn't enough. You go where the people are on Twitter.
So the interesting part about this is, and might seem off topic, but you'll understand. So Lady Gaga has her own social network,
right.
Little Monsters.
Yes.
I thought that was
a really good one.
There's an opportunity.
It was a brilliant move. Bring them in. She can market to them directly, talk to them directly, and not rely on all this noise.
And for that to succeed, I believe, I don't think people are going to be on two different places. So people are going to abandon Twitter for Lady Gaga. That's only the hardest core Gaga fans. Good for Gaga. Doesn't really make a difference in the realm we're talking about. Mm-hmm. People have limited time. They have a little bit of attention. They're not going to participate in four different Twitter-like social networks. It's just not going to happen.
But the irony is Sarah Ross, who's part of the new Waywire company that Cory Booker's involved in, I met her recently. She helped, as I understand it, she helped really build Little Monsters, and she used Twitter to do it.
Yep.
So it's exactly what Drew was just saying. You exploit Twitter.
So that network effect to get really huge, you're going to have to get the mainstream consumers over to it, right? Because you can get the people that started on Twitter very early. And it took years for us to be loud enough to bring people in, to bring brands in, to bring interest in. How do you replicate that again? How does Facebook replicate what it created with starting with colleges and keeping it closed? Can someone come along and do that again? Or did they really nail it? I don't believe that innovation is over and it's them forever. But boy, it's not as easy as replicating technology.
And I think Google Plus has shown that. Bringing it full circle, Google Plus has shown that, as good as it is and as much as us technologists like it for the conversations we have there, you know, it's got a long way to go to get up anywhere close to where Facebook is.
Absolutely.
So how do we find out how well Outlook.com, Microsoft's new email venture, is doing? On Twitter. They tweeted, 1 million people have signed up for a new modern email experience at Outlook.com. And there's the growth chart, which, you know, when you go from 0 to 1 million in a day, it pretty much looks like a straight line.
Microsoft keeps fighting yesterday's battles, though, don't they?
Search, well, they, you know, they say we're going to reinvent email, but really it looks to me just like a skinned Hotmail, isn't it? It's just Hotmail.
If you're going to reinvent email, you have to have a structure that gets me relevance and gets rid of spam.
Well, they have junk mail filtering, as I see my spam.
Yeah, I know, but that's still not. It's not just spam. It's also people who can bug me, who I don't want to bug me.
It seems like mail is ripe for reinvention.
That's another Marissa opportunity.
AOL mail just reskinned itself.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Here's the deal with Outlook is it does integrate into Office 365. Mm-hmm. For instance, I see in my quick views in my folders, I also see SkyDrive documents. Mm-hmm. I see photos that I've shared. I mean, I think that there is some potential there for somebody who's really sold into the Microsoft ecosystem.
Yep.
But it does not reinvent email. It's the same exact thing as any email
client. Reinvent the relationship. This is Bob Lyman from Google sat me down one day and said, and I'll tell you, Jeff, when email was broken, we talked about this some time ago, it's when the decision was made to allow the sender to control.
Yeah.
And that's what broke email. And so you need a recipient controlled infrastructure, which is an entirely separate infrastructure. I allow you in to have conversations with me under these terms.
Yeah, but
violate route.
You just said a guy at Google told you that. What have they done to make it happen?
I'll tell you exactly what they did, Leo. That's the architecture of Google Plus.
Yeah.
So Google Plus is recipient controlled.
Well, it's not replacing
the only things
mine.
That we're not. The only things we're not that became spam were that you could get were the things they've eliminated.
Yeah.
And so you are in full control of what you see on Google Plus, and you can get rid of people, you can get rid of messages, you can get rid of other things. The only thing that comes in is some measure of comment spam, and they made it very easy to deal with. Otherwise, it is fully recipient controlled. So I think that Google Plus is the beginning of a whole different architecture of communication, but that's not the way they've set it up. They've set it up as social and be everywhere. But I think there's an opportunity to rethink in recipient control and take a subset of that. The irony is Google Plus is actually fairly hard to send a direct message to someone, and you're afraid they're going to miss it.
Yeah, and it really just turns it into email.
Exactly.
Frankly.
Yeah, right. Direct messaging is
it's not, an email message.
Did you guys see the video for the new outlook.com?
No.
It's kind of interesting because I signed up for this because, well, now I need to replace my Hotmail account, which is where all my junk went. But it was kind of interesting because they show this video of a chalkboard, right? And they draw up basically a picture of Gmail. And they cross out all this stuff and they say, oh, we want to get rid of this. We want to get rid of this. We want to get rid of this. And then you get to the Outlook page and it looks like what they just crossed out to me. Yeah, here it is.
Gmail. Why well,
here's the picture. Watch the picture.
So it's Gmail, yep. Obviously.
Here's the stuff they cross out.
And they cross out that.
A little bit of fluff at the top.
Yeah. Yeah. And they cross out, a lot of sidebar stuff. Which, by the way, they replace on Outlook with ads.
Yeah, exactly.
Clean UI, intuitive, modern devices, Office, SkyDrive, Sweep. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen, the brand new Outlook email.
You know, you've got the blue paper engineered from the ground up to be completely different.
But I love that they
use
the metaphors.
You're right, it does look the same.
It looks exactly the same as what they just crossed out.
Exactly.
By the way, this is
a blackboard, not a whiteboard, and a blueprint, not cat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, to me, why Microsoft seems like they just... There's something wrong in Redmond.
What the heck? You're exactly right. That's crazy.
I watched the video, and I'm like, are they crossing themselves out?
Well, look at mine, because what they replaced, they crossed out all those things on the right, the calendar and everything. They replaced them with contact lens commercials on mine. It's like, I don't know why I'm getting glucosamine for dog ads.
Yeah.
But this is not what I want to see in my email, to be honest. And I don't think that that's really solved any problems. And as for the left part,
Microsoft's going overboard with the Metro thing. They're like, we're going to slap this Metro design on everything, and you're just going to love it.
Well, they need to, because they're trying to. This is their antidote to what everybody else, particularly Apple, is doing. And so they need to go all in. You can't just say, we'll do some Metro in some places.
This is the culture.
Even their website looks like it.
From its very beginning, right? From CPM to MS-DOS, from WordStar to Word,
right?
From Google Search to Bing.
Yeah, you're right.
Microsoft has never, ever, ever innovated an entirely new product. And I'm not criticizing that. It's kind of the Jason Calacanis model, too.
Right.
Ow! Hey, this is the new Microsoft website, by the way. And even this, they stole from the Dutch subway system. So there you go.
Hey, Leo, did Microsoft tweet out how many of those million users are still active with Outlook.com?
Well, you had to switch. I switched because we're on Hotmail, right? So Hotmail, by the way, is bigger. I'm pretty sure still bigger than Gmail. I mean, it's huge because lots of people like Aaron use it for their spam,
right?
Their spam address. Yeah. Everybody who has a Microsoft account has a Hotmail account. So you just, I wanted to get my name at Outlook.com, so I'm immediately signed up, but I'm not going to use it for anything substantial, but you got to have it.
Well, not only that,
there are some side benefits. You get a free Office 365 account and stuff like that.
Well, I thought I saw it. One of the ways I think they got to this, maybe not, I mean, I could be wrong. But I think that everybody that had a Microsoft Live account, or an existing Hotmail account, like automatically was in the system, right? So, I mean,
right.
That's one way to get a lot of users is you just take all your existing users and say, boom, now you got an Outlook.
You mean account. Like Google Plus?
Well, okay.
That's why these numbers are meaningless at this point.
Yeah, but I think that's the way they did it. Now, one thing I will say that's good about this, as I looked at this, was I think that it needed rebranding, right? Everybody kind of used it. Like I said, everybody kind of uses Hotmail as their spam.
It's an email. Embarrassing email address. You don't want to be Hotmail.
Right. I'd never give that out to a potential employee or something, right? So, I mean, I think that they needed to rebrand, which is good. And the tie-in to Office 365 is also key for them. So as far as business strategy, I think that this makes sense. But, we'll see. It doesn't look very innovative to me yet.
Fred Flintstone in our chat room says the top three webmail email clients are Gmail, Hotmail, and Yahoo Mail. So Gmail has built up its it is now number one. What are Fred, if you can get me the numbers on those, that'd be great. I don't think Fred Flintstone is his real name. It could be. Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail. But then another, as you said, Jeff, opportunity for Marissa Meyer at Yahoo.
Yep.
Yahoo Mail is a big player. Could easily impress everybody. I thought Yahoo was number one.
I thought it was still as big as
they were at one point.
So maybe Fred
AOL still has stuff.
Maybe Fred's living in the past.
it's bad. Maybe.
Here we go. Fred's giving me a link to emailmarketingreports.com, often considered the definitive source for email and web statistics. Google has, according to a blog post in June 2012, 425 million active users. ComScore says Hotmail is 350 million. That was in October 2011. Yahoo Mail, according to ComScore, 310 million. So these are numbers, not official.
Right.
I guess it would make sense that by now Gmail would finally have surpassed Yahoo and Hotmail. Thank you, Fred Flintstone. Hey, we're going to take a break. Come back with more. Drew Olenoff is here from thenextweb.com. Great to have you, Drew.
Thank you.
So nice to have you. Your sound is excellent now, by the way. Thank you for fixing
good.
That. Yep. Also, Aaron Newcomb from
thesourceshow.org. And so many programs here on the Twit Network.
Yes. We love having him. He also brings donuts, which is nice.
Bagels, usually.
Bagels.
I brought donuts a couple times.
You know, for me, I'm carbohydrate challenged. A donut, bagel, they look exactly the same. I can't tell the difference. They got a hole. They're round. I don't know. What's the difference? Also here, Jeff Jarvis from...
And I never bring you anything.
BuzzMachine.com.
No bacon, no burgers, nothing.
Thank you. The Source Show, episode 14, Make or Fail 2011.
Yeah, I haven't updated in a while.
It's time to get a new...
time to sign up for Squarespace.
I'm just teasing you. Still, hey, that was a great Maker Fair.
It was.
That was a great
show. And I got an interview with the architect guys. Kind of interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
How they do their shows.
See, there's...
pretty cool.
Maybe we should help you with this.
Well, maybe you should.
Maybe we should, because we want to do more hacking or making.
Yep.
Maybe this is the way to get that in there.
That's what I do.
You, me,
that's
talk.
My thing.
I'll have my people call your people.
Sounds good.
We're brought to you today by Ting. I love Ting. I'm not alone. I'm just looking at tweets for their Twitter handle is TingFTW. Shivian says, my 4G Wi-Fi hotspot from Ting and Nexus 7 arrived tomorrow. I might be even more giddy than he is. Look, Zach says, looking for a replacement for one of the big three carriers. Pay for what you use at TingFTW. I just think Ting is an amazing thing. Go to ting.com/twig. And you can find out a little bit more, ting.com/TWIG. So what is Ting? It's an MVNO, but don't let that confuse you. It uses the Sprint network. So if Sprint works well for you, Ting will work well for you. And what it is you get your phone, you create a plan, but the beauty of the Ting plans is you pay for exactly what you use. You pay no extra if you go over. And if you go under, they give you a refund. So when you look at these plans, these are just to give you an idea. You start with the phone. How many phones do you want? It's great for a family or even a small business because you pay $6 for phones. So let's get three phones. Let's say among those phones, we've got 2,000 minutes. We've got 4,000, this is a month, text messages. And let's get all the data we can afford. The total cost of all of that is $124 a month for three people. But get this. You don't use all that, they give you the money back. You use more, no problem. They just charge you at the same rate. And absolutely free voicemail, picture, video messaging, three-way calling, caller ID, and I know you really want this, tethering and hotspot included free. And great phones, too. Just go look at the devices, and you'll see you're not making any compromise when you get a Ting phone. Ting's the thing. I want you to try it. TING.com/twig. You will get $50 off your device purchase when you use that website. So please do. If you want to take a look at the savings calculator, this might bring it home. You know, get your bill. Go get your monthly bill and fill in all these forms, and you will get a direct comparison of what your bill would be versus what the Ting bill would be. And it really is kind of spectacular. TING.com/twig. A great company trying to bring some clarity, some sense to mobile phone service. And I know you're going to like them. TING.com/twig. We continue on with This Week in Google. I think we're going to wrap things up. There are so many. There are always more stories on the show than we have time to talk about. FCC has told Verizon you cannot block tethering apps and fine them $1.25 million. Yay.
Yes.
Because they bought Spectrum that had that condition on it. However, it does not affect my AT&T unlimited account where I still can't tether or other things.
Important clarification. That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Good reason to root your Android phone.
Yep. Amazon has updated their cloud player to make it more like iTunes Match. You automatically, when you have a matched file, get a 256 kilobit MP3 with no DRM. They're going to be on Roku and Sonos soon, too. So another reason. I use Amazon and Google and iTunes. I don't care. I'll use all three of them. The new Dig has launched, part of the news.me service.
Looks pretty.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of glad that that name is not, you know, just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very rare for something to hit, go away, and then rise in front of our eyes. So yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch it.
They apparently, they say BetaWorks, they rebuilt it from scratch.
Yep.
Ground up.
Wow. I'm not sure why they needed to do that.
It's hard to believe.
Pardon me?
I was saying it's hard to believe that they would, I mean, why? So they basically just paid for the name and the developers?
Yeah. Well, no, they didn't get, that's the funny thing.
They didn't get the developers.
The developers went to the Washington Post.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So new team, and I guess they didn't want to deal with the old code, so they said, well, it's not that complicated. That's funny because is this the right page? Is this the old dig?
No, yeah, it should be.
Because it's got an interview I did with Matt Williams many moons ago.
Is that cached?
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's cached?
No, if you go to dig.com, it should be okay. It's wholly new, Leo.
Dig.com. Maybe I have a cached version. Let me press the shift key and then go there. That's funny.
I'm the new one.
Ah, yes. I must have had a cached. Oh, this is pretty.
Isn't it?
It's a little bit more Pinteresty.
And it's kind of selected on top gone, and then actually, river below.
That's for another day.
Say again, Drew, what did you say?
I'm bummed that commenting is out of it.
You can't comment? Yeah. But can you dig?
You can dig.
I wonder if I have to create a new account. Success. Your digs will appear in your Facebook timeline.
Uh-oh.
I guess that's the only way I can do it, huh? Oh, well. NBC accidentally broadcasts a bare breast. Oh, I guess the dig is not so new after all. Okay, moving along here. Let's see what else. I just want to make sure we don't miss any monster stories that are breaking in the world of the Google and the cloud.
Quora, which goes even too far for me, Mr. Public, is going to have a new structure to post what you've read publicly.
Why? Again, with the dig like that. I don't. It makes me, because I read a lot of guilty pleasure stuff, and I don't want it on my social timeline.
Right.
And there's some exceptions, and that doesn't. But the default is that, which I think the sharing should be a explicit action.
So you mean because I have a Quora account, if I go there now and start reading stuff without my approval or knowledge, it will start to share that?
I'm not sure the exact structure. If you come in from a link, it won't. But from within Quora, yeah, it's gonna appear next to stuff.
And will it? It's only gonna appear on Quora. I believe so.
But I have not studied this in depth, so I'm sure the chat room or someone or their PR company who already emailed me will come forward and say something else.
Well, let me just...
correct me if I'm wrong, please do.
Let me just read a Quora question. Okay, I've read this question. And now, is it showing up that I read this question for people who are following me? I don't even know. I can't
There's
even
some
tell.
Algorithmic thing. I don't know.
This week in Quora.
I don't really use Quora that much.
Me neither.
I don't either. O'Malik posted a way to get rid of views, but I don't know if this is the way to get rid of the stuff you view or...
Right.
But he says there is a way to go into your profile, hit the settings, find views, and then choose no, and views are turned off. So
this article does say, thanks to Quora, you cannot read anonymously, which is...
Yep.
I agree. The lead on this is Quora, which I believe is one of the most overhyped startups. I always thought that. I thought, initially when people are excited and it's fresh and they want to spend time and they answer questions, it's great. But how long before people go, I'm not going to pour my heart and soul into this third-party website?
Yep.
Commodore 64, 30 years old.
Yay.
Did you start on a C64?
I did not. I started on a Trash 80.
Trash 80. Model...
It was the 2, I think.
2.
Either the 1 or the 2. Actually, it might have been the 1. It might have been a modified 1.
Drew's so young, I bet he started on an IBM PC.
Mm-hmm.
I did. But I did have a Tandy machine earlier on.
Okay. And Jeff's so old, I bet he started with an Abacus.
Hey. I have my Osborne 1 in the office.
Osborne. I loved that. That was an awesome computer.
Great machine.
I coveted an Osborne.
It is my pride and joy.
Yeah. We have one here. It's non-functioning, but we have one. It's going to have a bit of history, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got a Commodore here, too, don't you?
So yes, we got a Commodore. We've got all sorts of
There's one back
stuff.
Here.
I think there's a Commodore right behind us. Yeah, there's a pet.
There's a great video. I don't know if all of these links get put out on the notes, show notes, but there's a great video that the BBC did where this guy took a Commodore 64 and brought it into a classroom or brought some kids in. I think, what do you think about this? You know, and what do you think this is? And he holds up the old Commodore joystick, and the girl looks at it. She's like, is that a remote control?
No one knows.
And then she's like, is that actually connected to the TV?
No one knows.
It was great. Some of their responses were just classic.
Oh.
They didn't know what a tape was because he had a tape to load some programs. They didn't know what the cassette tape was.
People are very nostalgic about it. I have in my office a joystick that Jerry Ellsworth designed for sale. And you've seen these since, a joystick you plug into your TV and you can play Commodore 64 games.
Right.
She put a back door into it that if you do up, down, left, 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 it unlocks a full Commodore 64 with Commodore Basic. The whole thing is in there.
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
I love it. Love it.
She's so great.
That's sweet.
Isn't that sweet? All right. Let's get to, now this is something we normally do, and I don't know if you were prepped for this or not. But normally, Gina does a tip of the week. Now, I know, Aram, you could probably do an Android tip or you could do a Google tip. You want to do one?
Yeah, I've got an Android tip, actually.
All right.
If you want to do it now.
Fire when ready, Gridley.
All right. So the tip of the week
How to get Google Wallet on your Samsung Galaxy.
Close. Very close. How to get Wi-Fi tethering on your Android phone. So if you have an Android phone and you want to, you're one of the people that has to, there's a paywall, usually like I have with Verizon,
right.
And you want to get Wi-Fi tethering working. Lifehacker has a pretty good article on this that they just put out. And it turns out there's a number of applications in the market. Some of them require routing, some of them don't. But you can actually get Wi-Fi tethering to work. A lot of people don't know this. You can get Wi-Fi tethering to work just simply by downloading an application. I've got an application. I probably don't have a camera behind me, do I?
No, but I can. Maybe can I show? Chad, can you get him a camera?
Let me check.
We'll see.
Chad's going to work on it. The magic Chad.
So this is the camera that I have.
There you go. Look at that.
Great. Perfect.
So sweet.
Let me see if I move this over. It gets a little awkward. It doesn't look bad, but it feels very awkward. Okay, so here we go. So here's Wi-Fi tethering. This is actually one of the applications that does require rooting your phone. That's what it looks like. And once you have it installed, you turn off Wi-Fi, the automatic Wi-Fi service that's running. You click. It's actually sharing now. You can probably get it from your laptop. So it's actually sharing a Wi-Fi signal now. And when someone connects, it gives you a little warning that says, hey, this person connected to your Wi-Fi, and then you can click the button to authorize or don't click it, and they won't be able to get any internet access.
Well, let me just see if I can get on your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, see if you can find it. It's called Android Tether, I believe.
Okay, here we go. Tap the Wi-Fi.
I got a little ping here.
Somebody else is trying to get on you. That's not me.
Colin's phone.
Oil stop, free Wi-Fi, Twit product, Android Tether. I'll give everybody access.
Nice.
There, I'm connecting.
Because I'm a nice guy.
Look at that. We're all getting on his Android Tether. That was you, wasn't it?
Oh, here comes some more.
Here comes some more people. We're all connecting to his phone.
No one's going to get any bandwidth
now. Let's bring it right to its knees.
Right. But these are all people internally, and I trust you guys.
Now, some Android phones have tethering just in there, right?
Some of them do, and of course you can buy it. You can pay for the service from Verizon or from AT&T. You know, so you can do that. But actually, there are other applications out on the marketplace where you can get that, which basically this one completely rewrites the functionality inside the phone. Like I said, you have to be root. There's another service on the marketplace. I think it's called Elixir or Elixir 2. Yeah, here it is. Elixir 2.
When you say service, it's not an app. It's a service.
This is an app. Sorry, okay. I misspoke. Yeah, this is an app you can buy. And this one actually does a lot of things. Elixir basically monitors all the sensors and everything on your phone, giving you all kinds of stuff. But one of the other things they do is they have a Wi-Fi hotspot, which allows you to basically get around that message that pops up from Verizon that says, you must pay for Wi-Fi tethering if you want
to
use
it. So is it illegal to do that? I guess not after the judge's
FCC
ruling.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. But
they can't stop it.
I'll just say use it as at your own risk. I don't think there's really a whole lot they can do to stop you from doing that. But anyway, so if you are kind of in that group of people that want Wi-Fi tethering and you keep getting blocked, there are a couple apps out there and you ought to take a look at them. And
Jonathan says that there's one called Foxfi that does not require rooting.
Right. Foxfi does not, and I believe that this Elixir 2 does not require rooting.
That's kind of cool.
But I like the one that actually uses the root system. I trust it a little bit more.
Right. So. And now we know that Verizon is no longer allowed to block these.
That's right.
Or to charge. Well, can they charge you?
They can still do it, I think. Actually, I think they can still block on some of their plans. Like I think the I think the unlimited plan, I believe they said they were still going to block the unlimited plan. But some of their tiers, they're not allowed to because of this acquisition they had. So that's my tip.
Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
Well, I want to do two quicks. First is a plug. The number is 7,000. That's how many people are going to campus party in Berlin, 7,000 people.
What is
incredible. They hold it normally down in South America, and they're going to have one in Berlin. Next year, they're going to have one in San Francisco down at, I think, at NASA. They're going to do it at the Tempelhof Airport, which is a closed, gigantic airport from the 30s. And 500 hours of programming, just really unbelievable. And they've asked me to come over and keynote on the last day about freedom of the internet. And so I wanted to give them a great plug. It's really an amazing program. There's a slight chance that the transportation may not work out, but my hope is that it will. And I really recommend looking up Campus Party for Berlin. And if you're in Europe, it just looks amazing. One thing
is
they're
just
doing
like
is
really easy for you to go to Germany. You seem to go like for the weekend all the time.
This is going to sound egotistical, but I have more of a brand in Germany than I have here.
What? Really?
Yeah, I know. It's really weird. People say,
oh, you're the Jeff Jarvis. We love you.
That bozo American who talks about us being naked. Yeah.
He's a David Hasselhoff. So, what is it that your brand is in Germany? I mean, what are you known as?
That I complain about their privacy and government and that kind of stuff. So I'm crazy American.
Oh, it's a crazy American.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to give them a plug. So Campus Party in Berlin, and then next year when it hits America, I think it's really, I got
the
rundown from Lisa Lang, and it's incredible. They gave 3,000 scholarships, and they're picking buses to campuses around Europe and then bringing in 3,000 people, and they sleep in tents at Tempelhof. It's like the world's biggest food camp. And
that sounds really quite wonderful.
Amazing. So it'd be quite amazing. So for a number, let's see here. 97% of the conversations that occurred about the opening ceremonies, according to the Telegraph in London, occurred on Twitter, which goes back to our earlier conversation where I think that's an important thing in terms of its power in there. That's where our conversations are.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing. So that's me.
Nice.
Wish we could do something about that. My tool of the week is just a note that if you have not tried Spotify and you use Android, this would be a very good time to try it. They've made it free for all Android users. That means you get all the Spotify premium features without paying a monthly fee. Spotify is worth the $10 a month. I use it on every device. I think it's my favorite music platform. But maybe you want to try it and see whether you like it. This is Spotify running on the Nexus 7. They have a very nice tablet interface. And one of the things you can use now that the full version is free is their radio, which is really cool. You know, it's kind of Pandora-style radio. Let's listen to some black metal. And unlike Pandora, if you like the song that you're listening to, you can actually save it and put it on your device and have it there even offline. So Spotify is really cool. So if you like a song, give it a thumbs up. And then it's saved to a like from radio playlist on your desktop, so you can listen to it wherever you are. I don't know how long Spotify is going to offer this for free, but it's really my favorite music service. I have a lot of playlists on there. The ability to share and save playlists and share them. If you go to Google Plus, you'll see a lot of Spotify playlists. Andy Iannocco did a fun thing on Google Plus. He said, if you could just pick one song, the song, what would it be? And I subscribed to that playlist on Google Plus because it's great. It's called the Andy Iannocco's One Song Playlist. Now it's 161 tracks of songs that people say, this is the song in my life. And so that's fun, right? I mean, what a neat idea. Yeah. And it's a social playlist, so it could even grow some more if people find that posting and add some more stuff to it.
That's cool.
Yeah, Spotify is really neat. If you've never played for it with it and you have an Android device or phone, here's a chance to try it for free for however long they continue to offer that.
First app I always download.
Yeah, isn't it great? Big fan.
I'm obsessed with Spotify. Yep.
I follow you on Spotify. Hey, thanks for following us on This Week in Google. We do this show every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. What? Did I forget something?
Drew's tip.
Oh, Drew has a tip, too.
I have a tip.
I didn't mean to leave you out.
No, it's cool.
Oh, Drew Olinoff from The Next Web. What's your tip?
Everyone, Google Medal Count. M-E-D-A-L Count. And you get a nice display of how the countries are doing in the Olympics.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then you get the knowledge graph on the right-hand side with some cool schedules and stuff.
This is for the Olympics. Medal count. What a great tip. I love that. So China is leading with 30, but we're right in the pack with 29. That's awesome. What fun. And you can see all the events. There's a schedule, links, and more. Of course, if you click watch online, you have to have a cable account if you live in the United States.
Yeah.
Thanks, NBC. Thanks, NBC. You know, I finally realized that, in fact, I'm getting more than enough Olympics. I don't really need all 5,335 hours. Just a couple hours in primetime every night. It really is enough Olympics for me, personally.
You don't feel like you're missing out on all the badminton that's... Crazy badminton fans.
Not really. I guess if you're a sport.
Had a huge scandal.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yes, they were throwing games so that they could change the lineup or whatever you call it, the brackets.
Right.
And they got thrown out. What, four teams got thrown out?
Really?
Yeah, they were taking dives so they get a better match in the finals.
That's not
badminton.
That's not badminton. Who knew?
That's good.
I think some of the fun went at it when I realized that once it was under 60 degrees Fahrenheit, they didn't have to. They could cover up the bikinis in the beach volleyball. That's when I just lost interest.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Your dig at heart, Leo.
Yes. Yes. I'm going back to that dig article right after the show, by the way. Hey, thank you for joining us. Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com. His book is Public Parts. You must buy it. You must buy it. We also thank Aaron Newcomb for being here. It's always nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
The effort. You make the trip. We really appreciate it. We should talk about the Source Show.
Absolutely.
Maybe we can bring it back to life. We can make something happen here.
Yeah.
And Drew Olinoff is The Next Web, and it's really great to have you. Old friend. And see you again. All's well.
Thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see. And stay tuned because Triangulation is coming up next. And I think it's Zalman, right?
Right.
Jeffrey Zalman will be talking about the future of the web. That's going to be very interesting. Next on Triangulation. Have a great week, and we will see you next time right here. Bye-bye.